Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Film Stage Show, the official podcast of thefilmstage.com. As always, I'm your host, Brian J. Rowan. With me today, Nick Newman.
Hello.
Allô. Bonjour.
Bonjour, merci.
We also have our benevolent lord and master, Jordan Rope.
Hello. Thank you. You always call me that. Come on. You don't need to do that.
Why?
It just sounds evil.
But I say benevolent.
I know. All right.
Which is exactly the type of thing someone would be forced to say by someone who wasn't benevolent.
Exactly.
He is benevolent.
He is the greatest editor-in-chief of all time.
My French accent is always just some mangled Euro trash, indecipherable nonsense.
I'm so glad we have another movie that we can deploy shitty accents on, because I really enjoyed that during our Black Mass podcast.
Oh, I wasn't there for that.
You weren't. You missed a time.
Yeah, I missed a...
Amanda's Boston accent was like old Jewish New York woman.
I will... go and listen to that as soon as we're done with this. I'd like to hear that.
All right, good. So, today we'll be talking about The Walk, which is the newest film by director Robert Zemeckis, starring Joseph Gordon-Levitt. And it tells the true story of Philippe Petit's high wire walk between the Twin Towers of the World Trade Center in 1974?
Yes.
Cool. Glad I got that. And this was dramatized and documented in Man on Wire, which is actually streaming on Netflix now. So if you haven't seen that, take a minute, check it out. I'm also going to talk very briefly up front about Pan, which is the newest film by director Joe Wright. What was the whistle for? Are we not looking forward to the review of Pan?
Well, no, nothing against your review. I just forget that Pan is an actual motion picture made by human beings.
Which will
that
be
is
released
coming out
soon.
Yeah. No, I think I'll sometimes see posters for it at a bus stop in New York, and I'll look at it for a second, and because I don't read the title right away, I squint and I go, "What is that?" And then it says Pan, and I think, "Oh, yes."
Oh, right.
Yeah, no, it seems like that. I don't know. It's just kind of not coming out to much fanfare.
I've seen a couple things for it. I'm pretty sure that they're probably marketing it to people who aren't us, which would explain why, you know, 20-something men who are deep into meaningful cinema aren't seeing advertisements for a jolly little kids film.
Right. I don't watch Nickelodeon, so.
Exactly. Yeah. Pan does star Hugh Jackman and Garrett Hedlund and Rooney Mara. So it's got some names, got some people in there. Before we get into that, let me tell you all folks at home that you should review us on iTunes, give us a star rating, give us a comment, let us know how we're doing. Of course, you can always comment on the pages that these episodes are posted on thefilmstage.com. And you can follow us on Twitter, at Film Stage Show. Any other news or things we need to talk about, gentlemen, before we jump into everything?
Well, go ahead, Nick.
Yeah, briefly, I just want to... Chantal Ackerman died. And
yes.
Ackerman has... I've talked about her on the podcast a few times before. She's just a really major figure any way you cut it. But, you know, like a lot of people, she was a major figure to me personally. And so it was one of those passings that really hit me in a way more than I was expecting.
Yeah, you were all over Facebook and Twitter. I was actually slightly worried about you.
Yeah, I was pretty stunned by it. I mean, I was on the phone with somebody when I saw the news, and I kind of blacked out during the phone call because I just couldn't focus on anything else. Fortunately, it was a short phone call, but Yeah, no, it's, I wrote up a thing for the site. I wrote like a small obituary, and I linked to, I embedded some work of hers that you can see, some of which you can just see for free. And it was one of those things where, you know, when you write about somebody who you really care about and who means a lot to you, it never really feels adequate, especially in an instance such as this, when she has died. But I mean, you know, it's the outpouring of love and support has been very moving.
And
I
she was only in her late 60s, right?
She was only 65, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And there's been speculation as to how she died. There is some speculation that she committed suicide, but it hasn't been authenticated yet. Le Monde in Paris said that was the case, but it, again, hasn't been authenticated. And we'll find out eventually, I guess. But
and for anyone at home, this was the director of Jean Dielman.
Yeah.
Yes. That's probably the best known...
Mm-hmm.
thing that you were all forced to watch in film school, rightfully so, before it sounds like I'm being dismissive.
Right. And as I linked to on the site, the Criterion Collection released an eclipse set of something like five of her movies that I embedded the Hulu streams to. They're not that really that hard to find, and they're all good to amazing, and so there's that too. I mean, it's she had a very long, rich career. Her new movie is at the New York Film Festival right now, and I'm seeing it on Sunday. I missed it at the press screening, and I actually just bought a ticket to go see it because I wanted to see it so much. And, you know, now suddenly it's going to have this kind of huge burden on it. But, you know, sometimes that happens, I guess.
That is sometimes the way it happens. That happened with, who was it recently? Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I guess technically still has one movie left, The Hunger Games.
That's true.
Part 2. Which is weird because it feels like a while ago when he died. And that this is still coming out is kind of
well,
odd.
You know, it was one of those back to back filming things.
So. Yeah. I don't know if that'll be a really significant closing out, but.
He brought a lot to that film, more than it needed.
Mm.
But yeah. So check out thefilmstage.com to see the article. Is it an article, feature, obituary? What do you want to call it?
Well, it's a news item obituary with a link to work. It's the obituary part of it's fairly short. I just kind of had to. I felt like something had to be posted on the site, so I did that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now for my micro review of Pan, I'll actually have a full review of this posted on the site on Friday, and surprise, surprise, this is actually a pretty damn good film. I wasn't sure what to expect. I like Joe Wright quite a bit. His version of Anna Karenina made my top 10 of that year. I love Hannah. I know, Nick, that I think you and I have some disagreements there.
Nick better just mute the next 10 minutes.
I really like Atonement. Atonement, I think, is fantastic and one of the best adaptations that I'd seen until I saw Anna Karenina. Obviously, Pan is not directly marketed at me, and there was a huge concern, for me at least, that this was going to be the Peter Pan version of something like Dracula Untold. But I'm pleased to say that it's not. This is a very entertaining, very inventive prequel movie. But the great thing about it is that it realizes that even though it's telling the untold first chapters of a story that everyone already knows, it needs to have its own arc, and it needs to have its own character directions, and it should tell a complete story. And it does. And it doesn't... It has moments where it leans too heavily on, you know, they lose Peter Pan, and Blackbeard, playing by Hugh Jackman, says something like, you know, the boy is lost, and someone says, yes, he is a lost boy, which is like, why did you have to do that? Especially when everything else is really well modulated. We don't end the movie with everything set in place for things to be Peter Pan in what, you know, is probably the presumptive sequel to this. It actually begins a whole new story arc that I don't think people would have seen or heard before. And it doesn't rush through character beats to take people from strangers to best friends to vicious, bitter, mortal enemies in the span of a single film, which is a problem that a lot of prequels have. By the end of this movie, you're actually invested in the friendships and relationships that have come up. And when I was leaving the theater, I found myself thinking, I can, it's not like the next Terrence Malick film where I'm chomping at the bit, but I was thinking, I'm interested to see what they do with the next film and where they take these relationships and how things change to become the story that we all know. So, Pan, coming out this Friday, the day that this is released, I think people are going to be surprised at this one. It does do the whole there's a prophecy thing, but I don't want to spoil it, but the prophecy isn't him becoming Peter Pan with Tinkerbell and everything else. It leans on that while also shying away from it and even discrediting the need for that kind of narrative logic.
How are certain musical sections? I won't spoil anything.
I really liked the two musical sections that I believe you're talking about.
They're certainly hiding that.
they're hiding it. I don't know how it'll play to some people. I know that to myself and even my girlfriend, who's usually pretty cynical about shit like that, it was a strange and wonderful surprise. So, yeah.
All right. My ticket's bought then.
Right. Well, good. You'll have to let me know what you think. I will say that this movie is a perfectly good encapsulation of the imagination of a small boy. So there are performances that are exceedingly broad in like a Saturday morning serial kind of way. Mm. But if you can adapt to that, I think you're really going to enjoy it. Like, there are going to be people who hate what Garrett Hedlund's doing in this, but I actually loved it. I found it very winning.
Nice.
All right. So that's Pan. Let's talk about the movie that's been on. This is another movie, actually, Nick, like you were saying about Pan, that I just kind of forgot was happening. It's The Walk.
It's Bobby Z. Come on.
It is. It's our boy, the director of Flight.
Mm-hmm.
And it stars Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who is an it boy in the industry. And it's got one of my favorite supporting actors in it, the divine Mr. James Badge Dale. And it's The Walk. So here is the trailer.
And people ask me, why do you risk death for me? This is life.
Welcome to New York. Anything to declare?
I'm going to hang a high wire between the two towers of the World Trade Center and walk on it.
Good luck.
No matter where I was going or what I was doing, I was always searching, looking for the perfect place to hang my wire.
Whoa.
I need...
Okay, so that was part of the trailer for The Walk. This is out in theaters now in IMAX and will be hitting wide by the time you're hearing this. So let's talk about it. Jordan Raup, what do you think of The Walk?
Sure. Well, I had the pleasure of seeing this at New York Film Festival. It was the opening night film, and they screened it in IMAX 3D. I actually sat next to Nick, so he can also discuss the experience. But I... of sitting next to each other, not the film.
Just what it's like to be next to each other in a film.
Going into this, I had much of the same reservations that I think everyone else had. Like, how are they going to kind of make this story that we, you know, if you're a film writer, I hope you have seen Man on Wire. It's, you know, one of the essential documentaries, I think, of the last decade or so. So I think that question of how will kind of the first half or even first three-fourths of the film be interesting. And I actually, contrary to popular belief, I think Zemeckis kind of pulls it off. I think by taking this kind of fantastical tone and not kind of something more dry and stale in terms of just the by the numbers step-by-step process of this guy's life, I think it actually adds a lot to the movie. There's some great touches Nick mentioned in his review, like the disappearing wires as he kind of levels up, so to speak, with his skill. I thought that was fantastic. Little, like, just really minor touches, like the black and white photos that he snapped, that the effect of that gets snapped during, you know, his fall, his first fall in the lake and stuff. Things like that, I think, just add this energy to the movie. I do think that it's it can fall into cliches, and I don't think some of the getting into his psychological state, like there's a sequence with, like, he imagines this box as a coffin. I don't think that works as well. But other than that, the build-up I actually kind of enjoyed. And then, the actual finale, which is more like a, you know, an entire act, I think it's like 30 to 40 minutes, is fantastic. It's just, you're on the edge of your seat. I felt vertigo. Nick can attest, like, I think I was audibly, like, being like, oh no, oh no, oh no, at least five or six times. So yeah, and the ensemble aspect of it is kind of wasted compared to Man on Wire. I don't think any of the supporting characters, really, other than James Badgedale, really add too much to the film. But yeah, The Walk is definitely a solid kind of September/October, fun film that doesn't really have a huge dramatic weight until the end, but it's I would recommend it.
So you didn't think that Ben Schwartz walked away with the movie?
I love him so much, but in this movie he's so
wasted.
Wasted.
Sad.
Yeah. So yeah, I would recommend The Walk.
All right, Nick Newman. First of all, is Jordan lying, or did he really freak out at the ending?
I didn't really notice that reaction, I have to admit. But it doesn't mean he's lying. Perhaps I was just so engrossed in Philippe Petit's drama that I was, it's no other sounds but the movie were notable. It's possible. So, would you like to know what I thought of The Walk?
No, I just wanted to know if Jordan was lying.
All right.
Well, anyway. Yes, no, tell us what you thought of The Walk.
So I wrote the review for the site,
you did,
as
indeed.
A matter of fact, and I had some struggles getting the review done because I found myself, even though it was a review of a film that was coming out that everybody could see within a few weeks and all of that, I found myself sort of arguing in favor of Robert Zemeckis as much as I was reviewing the actual film, because I kind of noticed this reaction that was going around immediately afterward where people said, well, the last section's good, everything before it. And I was in disagreement with that. I found the earlier sections really quite well organized and well assembled, and I think there was a real punch and verve to it. I think that his skills as a visual storyteller extend very naturally to this showman such as Petit, even kind of an ostentatious showman, as I think is often the case when someone has that label to them in the first place. They're kind of going to be ostentatious. And the way that he sort of marries his story and his personality and his profession into this visual presentation I found very compelling, not just things like the disappearing wires that go as they do sort of this decade-spanning in-camera montage, which I found very interesting. It actually reminded me of my favorite shot from his Beowulf adaptation, if you guys have ever seen that or remember that. There's a shot very similar to it in that. It reminded me of that. But also, I found the use of dissolves and match cuts and film stocks, and even just the way that the camera roves for an extended period of time, longer than it really should during a normal sedate scene, to be a very good way to sort of put us directly in his feet. And for me, it's about how it's measured out. It's about the fact that it is this very montage-heavy, big point-hitting movie that then allows itself to play out essentially in real time when the actual act is reached. There's something kind of cathartic about it. There's something very satisfying about leading up to this event and then actually playing it out, giving the audience what they want. But as far as giving people what they want, I found the earlier sections fairly good too. I'm not so sure about Joseph Gordon-Levitt's French accent, personality. It feels sort of false, but I think that is
it is not quite, how you say, authentic.
Authentic, yes. But I think as a physical performer, he gets something important there. I think that the way that he is moving across the wire, even if there is a big green screen digital manipulation going on, I think the expressiveness of his face is very French. I think the way he is using his arms and talking about things in this very sort of spastic, frantic manner, it to me is convincing. And I could understand who this person was and the way they are in this situation, why they're in this situation, why they're putting themselves in it. I also, you know, I like the supporting cast too, particularly James Badge Dale, who I think is fantastic as one of the assistants to the heist or the walk or whatever you want to call it. I keep calling it a heist because it's basically a heist movie.
It is a coup.
It's a coup. Coup d'etat. And yeah, so for me, there's this spirit of camaraderie and unity and the satisfaction of getting something major done that rests in this movie that I found fairly engaging and entertaining. So, I mean, as an opening night film of the New York Film Festival, I was initially kind of surprised. But looking at it, I think it makes sense, not just because of its tribute to New York, and I think its very gentle, tacit handling of sort of the cloud that hangs over the World Trade Center, but also just as an entertaining movie, too. I think it hits those marks. So, well, I don't think it's perfect. I think the movie is too verbose for something that should really be almost entirely visual. And I'm not sure about some of the extents to which Zemeckis goes to tell his story with his camera. I do think that overall it's a pretty satisfying picture. And I enjoyed it.
Okay. I gotta be this guy. Wow, this was a bad movie. I don't understand. You have such a compelling story, and there's so much that you could do visually, and he does some of it. I'll be straight. There were times when they were on top of the towers and you're in the 3D and the IMAX. I have a fear of heights, and it worked. It worked on me. I freaked out. But that is not indicative of a good film, and this, I think, is decidedly not a good film. It has Joseph Gordon-Levitt with his cartoonish Pepe Le Pew accent standing on top of the torch of the Statue of Liberty just talking at you the whole freaking time. And I thought that maybe that would stop when the walk started, but no, it keeps going. And what should be this beautiful, powerful, quiet moment at the top of the world where he is just focused and in his element is instead just ripped apart by this narration that they've forced on this entire film. And it, like, that moment destroyed the film for me, and the rest of the film had been deeply hobbled by that same insane choice, and I just couldn't get over it. It was distracting and off-putting, and the utter cartoonishness of every tertiary character. We hear it in the trailer. The good luck from the Port Authority guy or the customs guy, whatever he is. The friggin' cops that come. I mean, it's just awful. And when you have Man on Wire for free on Netflix, there's literally no reason to go see this unless you can convince the people in the theater to mute the walk scene. Then maybe it's okay.
Yeah, you do touch on, I will say, that Statue of Liberty section feels so it's kind of cheap and fake in terms of what, you know, trying to translate that device from the documentary, that I'm not sure why they exactly needed that.
It's terrible. And, you know, you say section, it's there through the whole movie.
Right.
It is interspersed.
The choice to especially do it during the actual walk was kind of, off-putting. But
Zemeckis is the kind of guy where I walked into this, I guess, with an idea of what he'd probably do. And I just assumed that the walk would be just like silent, but for the sounds that he could hear, you know. So I was expecting, you know, an uninterrupted shot of him walking across the first time, with nothing but the sound of the wire and the whisper of the wind and the ruffling of his clothing. I was expecting this holy, majestic thing, because that's what this was, and that's what they keep trying to make you feel like it was. But instead, you just get, you got this person in your ear just shouting at you the meaning of what you're seeing, and I don't need him to tell me that this was an important moment, that this was like a crazy thing that changed the lives of the people who saw it, because I get it. But he won't let me just understand it.
So this, I don't understand, this one moment is really sticking in your craw, or
no, I'm saying that it's the perfect encapsulation of everything that was happening through the whole film in that moment. And I'm like, if it's almost as though you've built up the moment so much that if you don't pull off the moment, the whole movie is pointless. And yeah, the whole movie's pointless. And it's not like it took a 10 and brought it to a 5. It took a soft 6 and brought it through a 3. Like, I didn't think that the movie really pulled off anything in any way that went beyond the man on wire. Or even just a person telling you about it. I mean, the performances, aside from James Badge Dale, were perfunctory to distracting. And aside from little things like him dropping his balancing pole and it coming right at the camera, or, you know, that it was a beautiful scene when you see the ropes falling away, because he begins walking with like 5 or 6 ropes. And so during this in-camera montage, you see the ropes fall away and disappear as he becomes better, which is interesting. And it's a good way to do it. Everything else, utter disaster. Like, just broad, cartoonish, just what. And then it ends in a way that's just especially cloying and doesn't belong to the style of story we've been looking at.
Would you say, though, that the tone reflects kind of his character in a way? Like, that's what I thought really added to that initial aspect. His outlook on life reflects the movie's tone, I thought.
If you had had that tone minus his soliloquy on top of the Statue of Liberty, maybe. Maybe it would have.
Okay.
But it doesn't.
See, I think this is a much better movie. I don't like Man on Wire that much, and I think that this is... I think it's important as a representation of this event because of the build-up to it that you see. And I think that the way Zemeckis brings it out in using so many tools at his disposal, to me, was very exciting, because I think this is a very formally muscular movie. And so the experience of seeing all of these various forms implemented to put me in the headspace of someone who I could probably never really understand why someone would want to do this, I found quite thrilling, actually. And I mean, you know, you talk about I do think that one bit where he gives the voiceover expository what he was feeling at the moment is pretty egregious. But for me, it's basically, in my mind, it's supplanted by the shot, it's weird to say shot reverse shot, but the fact that I'm even saying that I think is indicative of how effective it was for me, the dichotomy between him on the wire and the people down there. And the way that basically, finally, that passion he has felt and that, you know, that drive he has had is kind of being transmitted to the people at last. So what I said in my review is that I think one of the smartest things the movie does is that it goes from being a film about passion to a film of passion. And it becomes something where finally a physical act, something that is visualized, that is brought to life with a camera, is what gets people excited. And it's the idea that people are filming the event too. They're sort of put in a place where they have this communal reaction to the whole thing. I found that kind of moving, honestly. And I found the way that it was all built up to, and then it was paid off, to be very satisfying. And I mean, as far as the supporting cast goes, I do think that, you know, the stoner character is pretty bad. It's a completely worthless comedy bit that kind of feels like some of Zemeckis' worst impulses just coming out. I also wonder, between this and Forrest Gump, what exactly happened between him and hippies in the 60s and the 70s. But clearly he had a very bad experience. I haven't seen I Want to Hold Your Hand, but I mean, that's sort of pre-hippie, but I'd be curious to see that.
There were
seeds of that.
I can't say the source because I forget the podcast, but someone was discussing about when he was back in school and he went on like a tirade about all the hippies in his class that he hated.
Was that Fighting in the War Room?
It must have been, yeah.
I feel like they brought that up. I don't know where they heard it from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. It's just, like, this movie should have been, like, Ocean's 11 crossed with an impossible act of human will and endurance and just beauty and quiet and majesty. And instead it was a bunch of thinly drawn cartoon characters bouncing off of one another while one of them broke the fourth wall to shout at us every now and then.
You didn't like the, it has those elements, I think, though, that you, I just think you don't like the overall tone, because like for example, the element with or the scene with James Badge Dale, like when he goes back down the elevator and he has that, like, I mean, that stuff right out of Ocean's 11, it feels like to me.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, there should be more. It should take that moment's tone of, like, these people who are pulling one over on the world and about to show do it not for some, you know, primarily selfish impulse, though I think the movie does a good job of showing that Philippe Petit was an insanely selfish man. But it was to do something and show people something. It could have been something great. And I thought it was going to be something great. And, you know, maybe that's my fault for adjusting my expectations too high. But, you know, a small moment with a character who's introduced more than halfway through the film, who then disappears but for two small scenes after, it's not enough.
Who are you referring to?
James Badge Dale.
See, for me, so much, and I mentioned this in my review because it really made an impression on me. For me, the whole kind of center of that character is the scene where they sneak into the elevator and they're finally going to the top. And you may recall, there's a moment where he closes the elevator gate, even though he's not the elevator operator. And he has this smile on his face.
Right, that's exactly what Jordan just talked about.
That's what I was referencing.
Yeah,
that's great. But it's 5 seconds out of a movie that is over 2 hours long.
No, but for me, it's indicative of other things that the movie is doing. It's indicative of that kind of positive spirit, that willingness to kind of show, you know, how people did this amazing thing and got it done with a bit of a, you know, bit of shadiness on their side as well.
Right, but that, for me, it's only his character that embodies that, really. He's the only one playing in the movie that I would want to see.
See, I don't know, because I really like the scene where him and, I think it's Ben Schwartz's character, are on that beam with the giant elevator shaft below them.
Oh, no,
I
mean, that's the guy who's
afraid of heights. I think he's a French actor, I'm pretty sure.
His name is Jeff in the film.
Yeah. Ah.
Well, see, I really like that scene, too, because I think that the way he's using his skill to positively affect someone else's life, even though he is admittedly getting him into this situation because of his own craziness. I mean, sort of the confluence of character and motivation and questions about, you know, questions about accountability and responsibility, the way they all kind of converge in that scene, I found very fascinating. And I found that also very effective too. So, you know, for me, the movie is filled with little moments like that. And I love that. In part, I love that this movie kind of sort of homages Chinatown when he first discovers the drawing of the World Trade Center, because he feigns a sneeze or a cough to pull the illustration out.
Well, that's what he says he does in the documentary.
Right. But for me, I thought specifically of Chinatown, the way that scene is shot and edited, when people are kind of looking at him as he's doing this sort of silly thing. And, you know, that's another movie about, not to get too much into Chinatown here, but that's another movie about someone who kind of does something sort of stupid and gets themselves into this mess that really, when you look at it, you realize it's sort of their own fault. And so the way the movie has fun with his own looniness, I found very effective. I think it has kind of this I think it's more complex than you yourself are taking it to be, but I don't know. If the exposition bothers you enough to be a major sticking point, then I don't know.
Well, it does, but it's, like I said, it's the movie sans exposition would still be far from something that I would even say is worth recommending.
Okay.
Which is, like I said, unfortunate. I was looking forward to this. I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed. And that's without even getting into like the last 5 minutes where they just really try to beat you over the head with it.
Nah, see, I like the last 5 minutes.
Oh, Lord, Nick.
I did, because I think that what it does is, I think it sort of reorients the movie's questions of your relationship with a single location and how it's represented on screen. Because when you're looking at it...
They look different now.
No.
Everyone's saying they're different now.
That's not what I mean, though. What I mean is that the way that the movie represents it in a way where it's obviously fake. You know that it's fake because it would have to be. And it confronts that directly, I think, by having it close out with sort of the golden-hued image of the World Trade Center. And the question of applying your own personal history to a place where even if you are this guy and you did this amazing act at this place and you were the first person to really consider it, in a significant way. You were the first, as the movie shows, you're the first person to really take the building seriously. You can do that, but still the bottom can fall out. And you can still have something robbed of you, even though you are given a lifetime pass to this place. You know, your lifetime exceeds, somehow your lifetime exceeds that of this, you know, these towers, this towering achievement. And I like the way that it kind of, it questions how we perceive spaces. It questions how we perceive locations, and you know, is it bullshit that we are looking at it with a sort of nostalgia? Because does it really belong to us, or does it belong to everybody, or does it belong to nobody? I mean, even Philippe Petit he's not really able to claim ownership of it. And I don't know, the way that it shifts towards that, I always knew it was coming. There was no question that it was going to address that at some point. When it's always in the background when he's talking. When it's obviously this fake construction, it's not a matter if it has to or doesn't. It does do it, and the fact that it does do it is sort of secondary to the fact that I found it effective. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I don't know. I like the fact that it's so obviously a projection of his mind, because the World Trade Center is in the background, and you know it's not there anymore. So the way that it builds up to that, and it kind of slowly shifts directions, I appreciated, but.
Well, I found it just awful. But obviously we disagree. And, I mean, you know, I hate this because it sounds like I'm being an asshole, but, you know, I'm glad that you got that from it, because if I had been able to do that as well, I would have enjoyed it more. So if you, fine listener at home, feel as though you can align yourself with Nick Newman, go see the movie, because obviously you're going to enjoy it.
And me, too. I liked it.
And Jordan.
Thank you. Thank you.
But that's it. I could probably talk more about reasons why I disliked it, but it would just be more examples of the same. So let's just acknowledge that we're going to deeply disagree about this one and tell the fine folks at home where we can be found on the internet. Jordan Rapp.
You can find me writing every day on thefilmstage.com and planning to do a high wire act in my living room.
That's a damn high living room, apparently.
It is.
Nick Newman.
You can find me at thefilmstage.com, twitter.com/Nick_Newman, and unicycling over the streets of Flatbush.
I did love him on the unicycle. That was,
of course.
That was so bananas that it was okay.
The best getaway vehicle of all time.
And you can find my review of Pan on thefilmstage.com. I can also be found on Twitter at Brian J. Rowan, and my personal site, dearfilm.net. Join us next week. We'll be talking about Crimson Peak and Bridge of Spies, I believe. That's what we've landed.
Yeah,
on.
Perhaps a little double episode.
A little double episode. We'll do it like last week where we have two. Who
That's
knows?
What I meant. That's what I meant, split.
Oh, okay. Split episode. All right. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us. tune in next week.